Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I want you to know that the mothership has landed.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
What's up, my brother? I want permission to come aboard the mothership.
Asking permission to join a sports talk spaceship? Well, we're all a little crazy. The mothership has connected.
The mothership. Let's come aboard.
Happy Thursday to you, North America. The mothership has connected. Welcome aboard. It's the three-hour space shuttle shuffle. DA with you from the CBS Sports Radio studios in New York City, broadcasting to affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Anchorage to Atlanta, Bakersfield to Boston, Kalamazoo and Waterloo. We are on the air.
They listening, D.A. Everything we saying, D.A. Everything.
And we come to you live from the Quicken Loan Studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. How are we doing, everybody? Thanks so much for joining us. We have got a monster show. I'm serious when I tell you this. We have got a monster show coming up this morning. Mark Stoops is going to join us, Kentucky Wildcats head football coach, a program seeking a spot in the SEC title game. No joke. They have already defeated a couple of their demons this year, and if they can finish things off in the East, they would be going to Atlanta. That still means they'd have to beat the Georgia Bulldogs in a couple of weeks, but they get them in Lexington. So we'll talk to Mark Stoops about a ranked, resurgent, surprising team, the Kentucky Wildcats, coming up 1 hour from now. We have got the Battle of the Bulge. The one and only Huge Freeze makes his college football picks today. We've got NBA TV's Dennis Scott, who will discuss the first couple of nights of the NBA season. We've got Randy Couture, who's going to join us. Multi-time UFC champion, now a member of the Professional Fight League as an analyst there, discussing their huge purse on New Year's Eve. He'll be in studio where the PFL is giving away millions of dollars, $1 million, to six different champions that night. And the big one, one of the greatest living athletes ever, one of the greatest players in NBA history, one of the icons of American sports, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, is going to join us at the top of the third hour, so 2 hours from now. We are absolutely stacked this morning. If there was ever a morning for you to just be locked in for all 3 hours of the Da, this is it.
Aw, the Da. I love the Da.
So we got to get to all of those wonderful guests, and we have to get to last night's enormous game, crucial game, game number 5 in Houston. Game number 4, rather, in Houston, where the Boston Red Sox were looking for a commanding 3-1 lead, but had to do it on the road against the Astros, the defending World Series champions, and they needed a break as well. The biggest play of the game may not have been anything after the first inning. It may have happened that early on, where Jose Altuve, with a runner on, smacks what appears to be a home run into the right field stands just over the wall. That's where right fielder for the Red Sox, Mookie Betts, runs over. He's incredibly nimble, agile, athletic, and fast, leaps to make the play, and it bounces away. It looks to be a home run that ties things up at 2 in the first inning. And yet, Joe West, the ump, calls it out. Calls it fan interference. After a delay, after what appears to be a pretty lengthy review of the play, whether the fan was over the line or not, Joe West upheld his original call. And a ball that hit one of the fans in the stands and then bounced back into the field to play is called an out, and a 2-0 lead for the Astros remains. And guess what ends up happening? A 2-0 lead for the Red Sox remains over the Astros. What ends up happening is Houston loses by 2 runs, 8-6. You know, for years, these are the types of plays that went against a team like the Boston Red Sox in an 86-year drought. All of the bad luck and October ghosts always went against them. But in this case, the Red Sox benefit from a controversial call and end up winning by that exact margin to take a commanding 3-1 series lead. How big a break did Boston catch, or was this the right call? It's where we begin. It's your cold open.
Long set, now the 2-1. And Altuve hits it in the air to right, fairly deep. It sends back bat, still going back on the warning track. He leaves, and that ball is off the wall. It's in play. I think they're going to call fan interference. They are. And Altuve is going to stop at second. Springer at third. Right field umpire Joe West saying that a fan interfered with Mookie Betts as he leapt to catch that ball. And the call is the same. So it's going to be fan interference.
I saw fan interference. I've had this a couple times, or we have as a team. And they deemed the fan reached over into the field of play and interfered with Betts. And Jose pays the biggest price because the trajectory of the ball looked like it was going to leave the ballpark.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
Robert Ford on Astros Radio into AJ Hinch. I applaud Hinch for not griping and grousing about the call after the game. Hinch would say, it's not why we lost. There's a lot of baseball to be played there. Other guys inside that clubhouse also said it was more about leaving runners on base, leaving outs on the field, and that we can't just go back to that and say that's why we lost. I applaud the Astros for that. Ultimately, though, I believe it was the wrong call, and here's why. I believe that ball was over the yellow line and into the stands, and once it's into the stands, both the fan and the player have equal rights to the ball. To me, it's not fan interference. If you come at me and you argue, Mookie Betts would have made the play had the fan not been there, I would probably agree. Betts had timed his leap perfectly. He was right there to make the play. It looked like his glove was going to camp perfectly under it. However, that's not the rule. The rule is not if the player's going to make a play, you can't interfere. The rule is once it goes into the stands, the fan and the player have equal right to the baseball. So it is not fan interference and an automatic out if that ball is no longer in the field of play. And I believe that's the case. Now, unfortunately, we did not have the proper camera angle to decide without a shadow of a doubt whether that was over the yellow line. But I believe that was far enough into that first row of fans to where Betts was over the yellow line, reaching back into the stands to make the play. To defend Joe West, his original call is fan interference. And I believe if you're going to defend him, he goes under the hood or looks at the replay or calls back to New York City, and there is not conclusive evidence that it's not that right, that it's not that call, that it's not right. There's not enough evidence to say Joe West is definitely wrong there. But I believe the call was wrong. And I believe that needs to be a home run, because Betts goes into the stands. The fans have equal right to the baseball, and the fans, to me, did not reach over the yellow line to do so. But the call is what it is, and that's a massive break for the Red Sox because 2-0 should have been 2-2. And instead, the Astros need to use the next couple of innings to climb back to tie and then take the lead. The other enormous break in last night's game, which is a great play by the Red Sox as well, is on the final out of the game. It's a two-run lead for the Red Sox, 8-6, bottom nine, two outs and bases loaded. If you went to bed early last night or just at a reasonable hour, you missed this moment. Bases loaded, two away. And this ball sinking into left field, if it gets under the glove of Andrew Benintendi, it is an Astros walk-off win.
Kimbrel comes to the set. Outfielder step to the right, the pitch. Swing and a line drive left field. Benintendi coming on, dives. And did he make the catch? He did. He got it.
The Red Sox win.
The Red Sox win.
I just went head over heels in my chair.
Joe just fell down.
Oh, wow, what a catch by Andrew Benintendi. And they're not going to review it. Unbelievable, what a play. And the Red Sox lead the series 3-1.
An absolutely incredible game, start to finish, not without controversy, ends like that. And what a snag by Benintendi. And how about Joe Castiglione, longtime voice of the Red Sox, falling over in the booth on that play? That's what this series has been top to bottom. And last night was bonkers, kooky, dramatic, controversial October baseball, and I loved it. By the way, what's going on in the AL East? Castiglione is falling over head over heels in the booth during the final call, just the same way John Sterling is hitting his elbow during a Yankees win call. These two old guys, the American League East, need to realize this is not a contact sport. Just make the call. Stop falling over furniture and hurting yourself.
Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yank. Ow. I hit my arm. Oh, Yankees win.
I just went head over heels in my chair.
Joe just fell down.
What a game that was last night. But yes, the Red Sox caught a huge break, and now they're up 3-1, and it will take the defending World Series champions to win three straight to get back to the Fall Classic. 855-212-4CBS. I know you guys got thoughts on last night's home run not to be by Jose Altuve. 855-212-4227. Twitter DA on CBS. Mraz, home run or not for Altuve?
That was a home run. That was a home run. It went into the crowd. The fan did not reach into the field to play. Betts would have made the catch if the fan didn't stop him from it, but that's the fan's ball, not Mookie's ball. That's what you want your home crowd to do. Ensure that that's a home run. And the MLB robbed Houston last night. Robbed them.
Pete the Body Bellotti, home run or not for Altuve?
That's a home run, and you can't overturn any of it on a replay because it's inconclusive either way. So he's calling it a interference on the field. It's interference on the field. It can't be overturned the other way, and vice versa. If it was called a home run, it can't be overturned.
Because we just didn't have a conclusive angle
exactly,
on that.
Exactly.
I'm surprised that at this point in time, now that we're almost a decade into utilizing instant replay technology and challenges, I'm surprised we don't have, like the pylon cam in football, a fair pole cam in baseball. There should be a little GoPro camera right inside the base of the fair pole that goes down the line of the outfield stands to see whether that ball went over the yellow line or not and whether the fan reached into the field to play or not. And that should be on both fair posts. And I don't understand why at this point in time we don't have that technology. Everything else gets slow-mo and HD. And that does not. That is perplexing to me. That would have made that so much clearer. I also believe, though, that was a home run, but there just wasn't enough evidence to overturn it for Joe West. When we come back here on the show, I want to get to your thoughts on that play last night in that enormous ALCS game. Also, is it possible The NFL is cooking up ways to move the Chargers out of L.A., but not back to San Diego. D.A., CBS Sports Radio.
It's the D.A. Show on CBS Sports Radio.
22 minutes past the hour. And if you're in Boise, Idaho, and you came out to see us a couple weeks ago, we have now posted all of the pictures, an incredible, enormous, stuffed chock full of pictures album on Facebook. All of the photos with all of you guys and all of our events are available there. So go to Facebook and check them out. More than 200 pictures are posted as part of our Boise trip Facebook album. So go to our Facebook page, like the show page, and see if you're in one of those albums and see if you're in one of those pictures and see how much things that Mraz ate that we took photographs of. Facebook.com/TheDA Show. Again, that's Facebook.com/TheDA Show.
Google, Yahoo, Facebook, Twitter.
Our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. Quick way you could save money switching to Geico. Go to geico.com. 15 minutes. You could save 15% or more on car insurance. Today, we're talking a lot about the ALCS game last night and whether Jose Altuve's non-home run was a home run. Huge controversy today. I believe it was a home run. I don't believe the fans were in the field to play, and I think that the Red Sox caught a monster break there. A note by the NFL, though. Seth Wickersham, ESPN, and ESPN the magazine reports there's been internal discussions within the NFL owners about what to do with the Chargers. They're through the midway point of season number two almost, and it's a disaster. More road fans show up. Nobody in Los Angeles cares about the Chargers. If there are football fans in Los Angeles, almost all of them are jumping onto the Rams bandwagon. And in a couple of years, the Chargers are slated to move into Kroenke World, this monster, huge stadium to be built as the home of the Rams, and the Chargers will be tenants. And already the Chargers are adjusting their revenue, where they thought they were going to make $400 million by moving to Los Angeles, and now they're dropping that to $150. That's a huge decrease in potential revenue after just basically a year and a half in that new market. And that they're talking about how bad the PSL situation would be for Chargers fans or people wanting to buy them for the Chargers games coming up in a couple of years. The fact of the matter is this. The NFL had greed in its eyes. They saw green pastures in Los Angeles. And they put two teams there thinking, the NFL is always popular and we need to be in that market big time. And they misread the situation. The city doesn't care about the Chargers. The Chargers' ownership is a bunch of bozos. And they ripped away a team from a city that loved them to a city that just doesn't care and it's not going to change. And so note this. Not only are internally there being discussions about what to do with the Chargers, but also this comes about the same time that Shad Khan, owner of the Jaguars, pulls out of buying Wembley Stadium. There's always been this idea that the Jaguars would end up becoming London's first official team for the NFL. And here was Shad Khan looking to buy the stadium in London. He just pulled out the other day. Is it possible, within the same timing here, the NFL is going, Shad, we're not moving the Jaguars to London. We've got designs on moving the Chargers to London. I mean, right now, the NFL knows that's their black eye. It's a PR disaster. They look like idiots. And when they go to a bigger stadium, they're playing in a soccer stadium right now that doesn't sell out, and mostly it's road fans. When they play at a 70,000-seat palace and there's 15,000 people there or 20,000 people there or even 30,000 people there, that's going to look awful. They're going to move into a gleaming new football palace and nobody's going to show up. They know this is a mistake. They know it can't be fixed. And I think they're looking for outs. Will the Chargers end up in London? I'm not so sure. I'm not ready to go that anybody's definitely going to end up in London full time. But you have to wonder about behind the scenes, if those two things are connected right now. The NFL should be embarrassed about what it did to San Diego fans and what the Chargers are not doing in their new market. Last night, controversial ALCS call. Was it a home run by Altuve that got robbed, or did Joe West get the call right? It was a two-run home run. Just so happens the Astros end up losing by two runs last night. My man, Mr. S, is in my hometown of Warwick, New York, listening on Sirius XM Channel 206. Mr. S, how you doing, bud?
Good, good, good. Love the show, as always. Love it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
All right. So Altuve's home run. Last night, I thought it was fan interference. This morning, not only about 20 minutes ago, I just watched a highlight replay from the right field foul line. The two guys directly behind Altuve's glove were in the stands. To the right of them, there was two other fans that clearly reached across the yellow marker line in front of the other two fans and hit Altuve's glove. I now believe it was the right call. It was fan interference. But last night, I didn't think so. But I will tell you this. The play of the game was Boston's left fielder.
Oh, Benintendi's catch was amazing, wasn't it?
Oh, it was scary, as you know. And I'm not a Boston fan.
Right.
What a great, you know, overall, what a great athletic plays you're seeing. Mookie Betts throwing the guy out at second, the catch and left. It's a great game.
I totally agree. It is so good to hear from you, Mr. S. Give all my love to everybody back at Warwick, man. It is great to hear you. And Mr. S., the dad of one of the guys that I went to school with, and he was a Little League coach of so many of my teams and other teams of my buddies. That is so cool. He is such a great listener, and I appreciate it so much. And it's interesting you bring that up, because there is a replay that you see of that play last night where the two fans that are involved with the baseball and closest to Betts' glove are behind in their seats, and then there's a guy next to them kind of reaching toward them, but also over the field of play. But that guy's not the one interfering with Betts. And so I see what you're saying, but is that what Joe West is saying, that that guy's in the field of play even though he's not interfering with the player or the ball? Or did West get those two things mixed up? John is next up. He's in Tulsa, Oklahoma, listening on 1300 there. What's up, John?
Hey, I'm just a Red Sox fan, too, so I've got plenty of bias. But I think there's no question they absolutely got the call right. The guy I look at is the guy in the orange shirt. And from what I can tell from the free shot, he had both hands. His orange shirt's leaning against the yellow line. His short shirt is actually resting on that line, and he has both arms extended. He's standing at an angle, so it's not like his arms are straight out. But from what I can see, it was his two hands that were pushing on Betts' glove, and so he was the one who made contact. And just from where he's standing, his shirt's clearly resting on the yellow line. His arms are extended. And then Betts jumped. If you just watch when he came down, it was still a little ways before he actually hit the wall. So when his glove was being pushed on by that guy, he still had a few feet of travel before his body hit the wall.
I do think that Betts would have made the play without fans being there. But I'm still having a hard time watching it time and time and time and time again today. I got a hard time believing that that ball is not beyond the yellow line and has the fans' equal right to it. The more I watch it, the more I'm saying the fans have the same right to that ball because it's over the yellow line, and the fans that touch it are not in the field of play. I do think Betts would have made the play. I just don't think that that is not also the fans' right to the ball there. Jim is next up in Pensacola, Florida, listening to CBS Sports Radio. Jim, what do you think about this call?
Well, I think that you have it exactly right. You know, I just read a piece online that takes in a lot of factors. Well, the clear question is it over the line or not? If it is, then it's just as much the fans' ball. I think what's really interesting is we have another Bartman here. And what I haven't heard is that anybody's having to get escorted out of the stadium and that kind of thing. So I think that's interesting. But my take was going to be on you talking about a camera in the foul pole, as in football with the pylon. I don't think that would work because the line that we're talking about is curved. Unless I'm missing something there, I just don't understand how if you had a camera there, and shot it, it would be any benefit at all.
It's not a perfect solution. You're right, Jim. Not only are some walls curved, almost all walls are unique in baseball outfields. Some are jagged, some jut out. Obviously, they're all unique. I'm just saying it would make sense to have some type of camera down that fair pole line on both sides that somehow tries to shoot directly to center field. And so that gives you at least a better sense of where that ball is over the line or not. But you're right, there is no perfect solution. The most perfect solution would be to have a camera hanging from directly above that you could zoom in on that goes directly to immediately over top every yellow line at every point and juncture in the ballpark. But that would assume that you would have to have a dome or a roof that you could hang it from up there, or one of those spider cams that goes across to all different posts like they have in football. But you're right. It is not the perfect solution. It just feels to me to be a better solution than not having one at all. When we come back here on the show, MMA legend Randy Couture is going to join us in studio because the PFL has an enormous New Year's Eve massive event where they're doling out $6 million to winners. We'll talk about it coming up here next. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Little wet, little drippy, 24/7.
DA, first of all, I want to start off by saying, man, I think you're one of the best sports talk radio hosts in America.
It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Too kind, too kind. Welcome back. DA with you here on CBS Sports Radio. Remember, if you're outside of your normal listening area or locally, you can't be able to find us, that's okay. You can check us out on SiriusXM Channel 206. Find us on SiriusXM Channel 206 or take us with you wherever you go. And that little thing you keep in your pocket that's basically a supercomputer on your phone, you can use the CBS Sports app to listen to us, radio.com or Apple Music as well, and watch the simulcast at watchda.com because right now we have a great in-studio guest. Every fight fan listening to the show right now knows this name. Basically, one name only needed. He's a legend in the fight game, a multi-time UFC champion, and he'll be on the analysis as the Professional Fighters League, the PFL, which we've talked so much about here on this show over the last couple of months, will culminate their season on New Year's Eve, doling out to six different winners in six different weight classes, $1 million apiece. Randy Couture joining us here in studio. Randy, good morning.
Morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. How you doing?
Very good.
You know, we've been talking about the PFL since the season began, and it's been really exciting to watch it unfold. And the big thing there is that there's a regular season, mm-hmm. there's a playoff tournament, and there's a championship round where the purses are won, which is so unlike how the fight game and MMA is usually structured. What do you generally think about that kind of breaking open the traditional structure of MMA?
Well, I think there were some questions with the format in the beginning, asking the fighters to turn around every 5 or 6 weeks during the regular season, which is a pretty big ask. Even rolling into the postseason and doing the quarterfinals and the semifinals in one night, both those guys will fight twice in one night. Again, a big challenge. Something we did early in MMA back in the day. I mean, my first tournament was just that, a tournament. I fought twice that night. I like it. I think it's unfolded nicely. The fighters have stepped up and really accepted the challenge, gone out of their way to finish. I mean, I think we have a 70% finish rate in the PFL right now, which is remarkable.
So, yeah.
These guys are getting after it, and it's been fun to watch.
I think that most fans would assume the toughest part about fighting twice in such a quick, rapid succession would be physically the toll on your body. But what about mentally? How about these guys trying to focus again for the next fight after everything you go through in the first one?
Yeah, there's a lot of layers to the onion. You know who you're matched up against in the first one, so you have some time to prepare, study footage, do some of those things that we normally do to get ready for a fight. You got to solve that problem. that guy that's standing across the cage from you. So you don't know who's going to advance on the other side of the bracket. So you don't really have, you know, you might have 30, 45 minutes to turn around and walk back out there. You might have 2 hours. Either way, that can be a plus or a minus. If you've got a, you know, swollen ankle or a bruise or something like that, the longer you sit, the more you're going to stiffen up. The harder it is to get back warmed up and ready to go again. You know, quarterfinal fights are 2 rounds. Semifinal fights are 3 rounds. So they're basically fighting 5 rounds in one night, which we do in championship fights anyway, and which they're going to do in the finale here in New York at the Hulu Theater on New Year's Eve. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, you know, but it is a whole nother layer to the onion, so to speak.
Yeah, Randy Couture joins us here in studio. It's kind of interesting because having that purse at the end of the season, it's very much like professional sports where there's that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, but you have to get through all these layers to get there first. As you watch it unfold, what do you think about the attitude of the fighters kind of fighting towards that one purse at the end of everything?
I think they like that they have control of their own destiny. There's no smack talk or anything that's going to get you into the next fight. You've got to win. And it's that simple. And the earlier you make that happen, the more points you're going to score, guarantee your spot in the postseason, all those things. They're basically in control of their own destiny, and I think they've embraced that, and they like that.
Nobody talks more smack than Conor McGregor and the entire fight world talking about the ending of the Conor and the Khabib fight a couple of weeks ago and guys going into the stands and all of that type of stuff. When you see the ancillary stuff like that outside of the octagon and the things that Conor has kind of put upon himself and his reputation, do you find that to be a negative at all?
I think it's a negative. I think it detracts from what mixed martial arts is all about, from the camaraderie of these fighters, the technique and the fight itself. All this other stuff that's being rewarded and continued to be rewarded by the promotions for talking smack or the biggest press conference antic, whatever you want to call this stuff, is I just think it takes away from who we are as athletes and what we've fought for so long to be accepted as a real sport and real athletes. So that's just my opinion. It was never my style. I thought Khabib had an almost nearly flawless performance that night, and for him to go off the rails at that moment, it just didn't make any sense to me. This guy's been talking all this. I mean, literally tried to kick you in the face at the weigh-ins, and now you're going to go off and ruin your moment. That, you know, the glory was there. He won it outright, no question. And to jump the fence and go after a guy because he's talking smack, it just didn't make any sense to me. But, you know, it is what it is.
You have worked with NFL teams, including the Cleveland Browns this past offseason.
Yeah,
and worked with NFL teams for years now, teaching them combat mechanics and techniques. How does that factor into football? Because I think a lot of people don't put the two and two together.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, we've been Jay Glazer and I started this company, MMA Athletics, working with a lot of individual players. You started with Jared Allen, Clay Matthews, I mean, Patrick Willis, a lot of the top guys, especially defensive players, because they get to use their hands a lot more. But recognizing football as a combative sport. That guy on the other line that you're keying off of every play had better have the worst game of football he's ever had, or you're probably not doing your job. And changing their perception a little bit about what football is all about what being in shape is all about, starting to get them to look through the eyes of a fighter when they walk up to that line every single play, and being in the type of conditioning where in the fourth quarter, when that guy's got his hands on his knees and he's looking at you like, oh my God, another one, you smile at him and say, yeah, let's go, pal. We got a lot more to go here.
That's fascinating. Randy Couture joins us here in studio. The Professional Fighters League has a huge New Year's Eve event coming up, and tickets are still available for that as the end of this regular season and the tournament kind of wraps up at that point with a huge purse. When you talk to football players and say, hey, I'm going to come at it from a combat technique or a combat standpoint, do they immediately get it, or did it take a little bit of time for them to understand the connection between the two sports?
Most of them get it right off the bat. I mean, you get with a bunch of these guys, and we break it down by position. We work with running backs and receivers. We work with D-backs and linebackers. Obviously, the linemen, the guys in the trenches, both offensive and defensive linemen, but you start making them pummel, and you start making them go learn to hand fight and move each other around chest to chest, body on body, in a real combative sports fashion for 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes. You know, they're used to going 20 seconds, 30 seconds sometimes, but that changes their perception about what being in shape is all about and what pushing another guy until you find his breaking point is all about.
I find the technique behind this idea also fascinating because we know in the NFL, defensive players can do less and less with their bodies. They can't hit a guy low. They can't hit a guy high to the helmet. They can't hit a quarterback and drive him to the ground. They can't even land on top of him. So much now is about hand technique. It is about swatting at the football. It's about making sure you wrap up and kind of lasso the legs of a player instead of actually kind of going in with a helmet shot. So are these players seeing, and maybe the coaches as well, more and more value every year with rules changes in the NFL about hand technique and hand combat?
It's an interesting perception, and you're absolutely right. I think the more technical we get, the more we break down, the more we implement wrestling, both Greco-Roman wrestling, collegiate wrestling, tackling, those sorts of things into football, I think the better off they are, especially with the rule changes.
How about acting for you? I mean, you've done it for a while, and you've had a lot of great roles and been a lot of great projects. Does it feel like second nature? Is it one of those things where you start and you go, boy, I'm a fish out of water, and then eventually it becomes easier?
Yeah, absolutely. I started, my first movie role was Cradle to the Grave in 1998, which is, you know, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And I feel like every time I go out, I learn something new. I get a little better. I get more comfortable. I spent my whole life as an athlete boxing up all those emotions and putting them to the side and going out and competing. Now they want me to let that stuff out. It's a bit weird, but I'm having fun doing it. I enjoy the process of it, and I'm getting better jobs, and that's fun.
That's awesome. What's the most fun part about the process?
I think finding a way to relate to a character, because at some point you're going to have to relate to that person you're portraying and tell the truth. Whether I have to make up a backstory that I can relate to, or I've experienced a lot of things, you know, I'm 55 years old, so I have a lot of my own experience, stream of experience to tap into, to find ways to relate to a character and tell the truth. That's what it's about.
With the Professional Fighters League, what fighter, has there been a fighter that's jumped out to you? You said, boy, I like watching that guy compete, or that guy's jumped off the screen at me.
Well, I think there have been a few guys that have been very, very impressive. Lance Palmer, was the number two ranked guy going in, but he made the finals, looked very impressive, gave Andre Harrison his first loss in the semifinal in his career. Vinny Magalesh, 4 submissions. I mean, the guy's on fire and probably the favorite in the light heavyweight division. Ray Cooper III, knocked out Jake Shields, never been done. Is on par for in the DC semifinals to have a rematch with Jake. So we're all excited to see that fight and see how that goes. But he's just been tearing people up and been fun to watch him as well.
It's a cool idea coming up on New Year's Eve, a cool New Year's Eve night, you know, to be out there and
yeah,
to be.
I'm excited.
You know, at the Hulu Theater as part of the Madison Square Garden complex there. That's a great night, December 31st.
Amazing place, historical place for fights. And I think all the fighters get excited when they get to fight in Madison Square Garden. Oh, my God. And so I'm excited to be there just as part of the commentary team. It's a great group, and we're going to have a blast.
And there is so much going on around New Year's Eve in Midtown Manhattan. There's so much going on that to have an event to go to, I think, is a great night because you can go to the event and then afterwards you can go ring in the new year somewhere at a bar, at a club, what have you. Go to Times Square if you want to go see the ball. I mean, there's just such a palpable buzz in Midtown Manhattan, all across Manhattan, but on New Year's Eve. And then to have kind of a big sporting event in the middle of that, I think is just such a cool idea.
Yeah,
it's going to be really exciting.
It's brilliant. I think it's going to be a blast. I'm looking forward to it.
So tickets are available for that. The Professional Fighters League, the PFL, is going to have its New Year's Eve massive kind of finale there. They're going to give out six different fighters going to get $1 million each,
That's right?
Right.
There'll be six new millionaires walk out of that building that night. That's a pretty good way to roll in the new year.
Right? I mean, that's pretty good. That's good cash for those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. That is, that's life-changing money for a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's going to be really cool. So check it out, the PFL. More information online. But once again, the Hulu Theater at Madison Square Garden on New Year's Eve. Six different champions will get $1 million each, and that's going to be an awesome, awesome New Year's Eve night for the fighters and I'm sure the fans as well. Randy Couture is going to be on the call. So good to have you down here, man.
Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you got it. My pleasure. Randy Couture joining us in studio. You are watching the simulcast at watchda.com. We've got a huge show coming up as it still is unfolding. We're going to have Kareem Abdul-Jabbar join us here on the show coming up in a little over an hour from now to talk about the NBA, as we've now just had the first couple of nights of the NBA season, so stick around for that. Dennis Scott's going to join us for the NBA TV crew. And coming up here next, Kentucky has one of the most incredible starts to the college football season nobody could have predicted. We'll have their head coach, Mark Stoops, join us. Number 14, Wildcats. Their head coach, Mark Stoops, joining us next. This is the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Oh, it's such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.